I wanted to devote the first segment of the shiur this evening not to Parshat Shavua, which Shemir Hashem will get to, but to something else, which is a timely matter, Al HaPerek, and that is the matter of Slichos, which will begin with Hashem this coming Motzei Shabbos, Sunday. There's a great deal to talk about, and although Slichos is a fixture in the year, there are certain aspects which certainly warrant a discussion and a deeper understanding. Where does Slichos come from? What is the source of this minhag, getting up early or staying up late? And for a number of days in the year surrounding Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the minhag is not mentioned in the Gemara. It is sourced to the Gaonim. It's mentioned in the writings of Rav Haigon and Rav Amram Gon. And there we see that there were two minhagim in the yeshivas in Bavel as to when to begin Slichos. The first minhag is to begin from Rosh Chodesh Elul, the entire 40 days. And that has been adopted by the Sfardim. The second minhag to be found in the Gaonim is that Slichos take place during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Those are the 10 days of Slichos. That is all that we will find in the early sources with regards to timing. Interestingly, there's a third minhag, which is mentioned in the commentary of the Ran to Maseches Rosh Hashanah. He mentions there that the minhag in Barcelona, in Spain, was to begin Slichos every year on the 25th of Elul. What's the yichus of the 25th of Elul? Well, it happens to be that the 25th of Elul is the anniversary of the creation of the world. When we talk of the first of Tishrei as Rosh Hashanah, and we even as we say Hayom Haras Olam, today the world was conceived and created, it's actually the anniversary of the sixth day of creation when man was created. And when we refer to the Olam, we refer to the world of man, working backwards 5 days. That gives us the calendar date as the anniversary of the creation itself, the 25th Elul, and therefore that would be their starting point. For us, therefore, it would be the Wednesday before Rosh Hashanah on that Monday. We're not aware of anyone who adopts the latter two minhagim. No one leaves it till Aseres Yemei Tshuva. That would consider to be less than adequate mileage from the Slichos volumes, nor 25th of Elul. The first we hear of our minhag, of minhag Ashkenaz, which as we know, it's the Sunday, but it's depending, that's mentioned in the Tur. The Tur, Rabbi Yaakov, the son of the Rosh, describes the minhag the way we know it. It depends which day Rosh Hashanah falls on. It could either fall on a Monday or Tuesday, or a Thursday or Shabbos. If it falls on a Thursday or Shabbos, then the Slichos begin from the Sunday before them. If it falls, as it will this year, on a Monday or a Tuesday, then the Slichos begin the Sunday before. Which leaves us a minimum of 4 days of Slichos, but sometimes there are more. And the question is, what's the background to this minhag, which again is not mentioned in the Gaonim? How does that come to be our minhag? And there are three explanations for this minhag. The one which is most quoted by the Mefarshim is actually based on another practice. And that's actually a practice which I don't think we have anymore. I'm not familiar with that many people that do this. But one of the later Rishonim, the Mordechai, quotes the minhag, in his time it was the minhag, that people used to fast for 10 days at the time of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. I mean, for us, we barely recover from Tzom Gedalia, and it's time for Yom Kippur. But the minhag back in the day, when people were hardy and capable of this, was to fast for 10 days. Now, the natural fit, of course, is you have 10 days. Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, 10 for 10. The only thing is, of those 10 days, 4 of them you can't fast on. Because 2 of them are Yom Tov. The 2 days of Rosh Hashanah you can't fast, although parenthetically that itself is not so straightforward. There is something of a machlokas, and some people felt that you should fast on Rosh Hashanah. That's we don't hear too much of that. The only question is when to make the Kiddush for us on Rosh Hashanah. But we assume that we're not fasting on the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, nor on Shabbos Shuvah. There will always be a Shabbos in the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, because the 7 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And additionally, Erev Yom Kippur, it's the one day in the year where it's a mitzvah from the Torah to eat. Therefore, of the 10 days of the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, we have 4 days where fasting is out of bounds. Thus, in order, says the Mordechai, to supplement the 10 days, so they would fast 4 days in advance of Rosh Hashanah.
What century
is it? 300s. Now, what's that got to do with us? I thought we're talking about slichos, but now we're talking about fasting. So what we need to appreciate is that originally, in the earlier times, the days of slichos were days of fasting. If it was a slichos day, it was a tanis. And that was the combination of tanis and slichos. Lahavdil, the only other times that we have slichos are actually fast days during the course of the year. All of the fast days, Tzom Gedalia, Tanis Esther, etc. Therefore, say the Mefarshim, that is what is behind bringing slichos back a minimum of 4 days. When you put the Mordechai together, that you'll need 4 extra fasting days, and those are the slichos days, that will give you the result that this will begin a minimum of 4 days before Rosh Hashanah. That is the most commonly presented explanation of our minhag of 4 days before Rosh Hashanah, which is very interesting, because for most of us, we don't have the fasting element anymore, but we remain with the slichos for those 4 days. This is to be found in the writings of the Levush and the Magen Avraham and the Prisha and many others. When the Aruch HaShulchan presents the minhag of slichos, this is the only explanation that he gives. A second explanation, which is quoted by the Mishnah Brura, is from one of the authorities known as the Elio Rabba. He gives a different background to the 4 days. There is a notion that on Rosh Hashanah, we and our davening has elements of a korban. Where does that come from? The Yerushalmi states, the Medrash states, that when it comes to all of the Yomim Tovim, and the Torah says to bring a korban of Musaf on that day, it will always use the term vihikravtem ola, etc. The only exception is Rosh Hashanah, where it doesn't say vihikravtem, but it says va'asisem ola, make an ola. And commenting on that, the Midrash says that on Rosh Hashanah, it is as if we have become the korban. Now, whatever that means, taking that idea one stage further, there is a halacha with regards to korbanos. Every animal that is to be brought as a korban needs a period of 4 days prior to the offering where it's kept, quarantined, inspected, and checked and safeguarded that it doesn't have any blemish. Within the context of us, the blemishes, of course, will be wrongdoings and faults and bad habits, etc. And therefore, the 4 days of slichos prior to Rosh Hashanah, says Elia Rabba, correspond or mirror the 4 days of inspection and preparation as we're about to offer ourselves to a certain degree as a korban, va'asisem ola, on Rosh Hashanah. That's quite a different explanation as to where the 4 days come from. Arba'a yemei bikur. Now, what both of these explanations have in common is that they have nothing to do with Sunday. They are elapsed time. They are 4 days. In principle, depending on what day Rosh Hashanah is, count back 4 days, and whatever it is, that's what it is. If it's Monday, so count back to Thursday or Wednesday. So how does Sunday get the beginning of Slichos? So the simple, straightforward, and balabatish answer to that is that it's a standardized date, it's a fixed point of reference, you can't go wrong with Sunday. When it comes to Thursday, you'll need Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and therefore it remains that way so that people shouldn't get confused exactly when to start. It's a sort of thing you don't want to remember 2 days before Rosh Hashanah that the 4 days have already started. Everyone remembers Sunday. So these are the classic explanations for Minag Ashkenaz. The 4 days of fasting, which again, we no longer do the fasting part, or the 4 days of inspection for Korban. What's fascinating is, and I don't believe this is that well known, that the Vilna Gaon has an explanation as to where our Minhag comes from. And surprisingly, for the Gaon, it's not a new Minhag. This Minhag is actually a variation on the custom of Barcelona that was mentioned by the Ran. The Ran says that in Barcelona, they would start to say Slichos from the 25th of Elul. What's 25th of Elul? The anniversary of creation. Says the Vilna Gaon, that's our Minhag, with just one variation. And that is that we reflect the beginning of creation, not by the calendar date of 25th of Elul, but by the day of the week. Sunday, Yom Rishon, is the first day, by Erev Ayvoka Yom Echad. That's the Yichus of Sunday. Apparently, our association within the flow of creation is Sunday is more powerful than the 25th of Elul. If you ask an average person, what's the Yichus of the 25th of Elul, they couldn't tell you. But Sunday is Yom Rishon, by Erev Ayvoka Yom Echad. And that's why we begin on Sunday. It's the Minhag of Barcelona. It's to coincide with the beginning of the creation of the world. It's just to take care of the finer details. If it's Monday or Tuesday, Rosh Hashanah, there won't be enough creation days if you just start on Sunday. And it's just 1 day or 2 days. So you pull it back to the earlier Sunday. If it's Thursday or Shabbos, or Shabbos you're safe because you've got 6 days in between. And even for Thursday, this custom arose after the concept of 2 days of Rosh Hashanah was well entrenched universally. And therefore you have the 6 days, at least through the second day of Rosh Hashanah. It's not worth making another week over. But the principle is we're looking to get back to Sunday. It's the day of the creation of the world. So thus far, very interestingly, some of the background to why we start when we start in terms of the days. What about when during the day are all times acceptable for Slichos? So the classic time frame, which is not really observed by most, but the way that it will be referred to originally, is to get up Ba'ashmores HaBoker. Ashmores HaBoker is the final portion of the night. The last slot of 4 hours of the night. Those are highly valued hours for us, and I'm not aware of that many people that get up Ba'ashmores HaBoker per se. More common variations of that are either at Chatzos, in the middle of the night, which is already a propitious time, or perhaps simply the amount of time before Shacharis, whenever Shacharis happens to be, sometime earlier in the morning. The most influential factor here is the Yud Gimel Midosh HaRachamim, what we say, Hashem, Hashem, Kerachem, Lachanun. They are the ones that determine the time more than anything else. And the reason why, and here, in a sense, we have no choice other than to take recourse to Kabbalah sources. When you're asking for Rachamim, you've got to know what Kabbalah says about the matter. And the Kabbalah sources say that the first half of the night is a time of din, the time of justice before Chatzos. That's not an appropriate time to say the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. From Chatzos, from halachic midnight, the middle of the night and onwards, that's already the time of Rachamim, and that's a good time. Now the question is, to what degree are we insistent upon this? Not before Chatzos. So the simple approach of most poskim is not before Chatzos. It simply can't be done. However, we should mention that Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked this question about reciting Slichos with all that goes with it before Chatzos. He was asked this question. It's dated Elul 1959. Rav Moshe Feinstein is in New York, and presumably, and he writes that people were actually afraid to be outside of their homes in the middle of the night. Some things haven't changed, especially not there. Which means that if you insist on chatzos, it will be a poor showing. Maybe the rabbi, who knows? It sounds like if they don't have another option, they're ready to say slichos in the beginning of the night. Is that okay? And Rav Moshe Feinstein says that in his opinion, although we see from the Kabbalah sources that it's not recommended, and presumably the tefillos, whatever that means, are less effective during that time, but if the alternative is nothing, it's certainly better than nothing. And moreover, says Rav Moshe, which is a slightly broader view, slichos have an effect on people. If you just go into Rosh Hashanah not having done anything, the Rosh Hashanah is not the same. It's different if you have days of slichos beforehand. And therefore, at least, to get people into the atmosphere of Rosh Hashanah, certainly slichos should not be neglected over that. He says this is an emergency measure, hora'as sha'a, what he calls. I'm not issuing this as a yearly psak. It needs to be revisited every year. But he feels that saying slichos in the beginning of the night is better than not saying slichos at all. However, the Sfardi poskim, certainly Rabbi Avadi Yosef, as a Zichron Levracha in the Chavadat, he quotes a Moshe Feinstein because he quotes everyone, but as far as he's concerned, it is so ill-advised to say the Shloshos Amidos Sharachamim in the nighttime before Chatzos. As far as he's concerned, better to say nothing. Better there should be no slichos, because this would actually cause more damage than good. And he quotes the Kabbalah sources inside, and if you see them inside, they're very convincing. But this is the machlokus between them. As far as Rabbi Avadia is concerned, if the only option is the beginning of the night, don't say them at all. And if you're with the minion in the beginning of the night, do not say them when the minion says them. Better to say it in the morning, and even better to say it before mincha, says Rabbi Avadia, which no one has ever heard of. But better before mincha than the first half of the night. So those are the opinions there. Of course, we're not coming to issue a normative psak, but just to be aware of the range of opinions. As we have mentioned, at the center of the slichos are the shloshes remidos jerachamim. Hashem, Hashem, kerachem, mechanan. They are really the highlight. They are the center of gravity, really, of the slichos. And the background to the yud gimel midos, and we say them, and where does that come from? So there's a famous statement in the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, very mysterious, in Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. Rabbi Yochanan says, Nis'atef HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kishliach Tzibur. Rabbi Yochanan says, if I didn't get this from the Pasuk, you couldn't say what I'm about to say. And to that we add, if Rabbi Yochanan hadn't said it, no one could say it. Melamed Shenis'atef HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kishliach Tzibur. Hashem wrapped himself up like a chazan and said to Moshe, Kol Zman Sheyisrael Chotim, if the Jewish people sin, Ya'asu lefonai keseder hazeh. Let them perform the following order of Yud Gimel Midos Sharachamim va'ani mochel lahem. So the very first demonstration we ever had of the Yud Gimel Midos Sharachamim was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo uva'atzmo. It's for this reason, parenthetically, that the Yud Gimel Midos Sharachamim are only said in a minyan. Other slichos, the paragraphs of slichos can be said even by an individual at home. But the Yud Gimel Midos Sharachamim need a minyan, because the Gemara just says the Rashba. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as having wrapped himself up like a Shliach Tzibur in order to say the Shloshes Midos Sharachamim. And this becomes the Brit Shloshes Rei, the extremely effective formula of Yud Gimel Midos Sharachamim. However, we must add, and I think it's very important and meaningful, to add this. Rabbi Nobachia says in his commentary to Sefer Shmos, the Parshas Kisisa, the assuredness that the Yud Gimel Midos will be effective in terms of attaining kapara or mercy for us are dependent on them being said properly. It's very easy to go through them. Judaism does not believe in magical incantations. Without kavana, it's not going to work. And therefore, says Rabbeinu Bachya, the special qualities of Yud Gimel Midos and being effective in evoking rachamim require that we understand what the midos are, and when we say them with kavana. And that's important when we're in slichas. Sometimes it can go quickly. Slichas has a bad mazel, because the paragraphs of slichas are hard Hebrew. Time is of the essence, and it's sometimes racing against the clock. But that's not the atmosphere to say slichas. Certainly not to say the Yud Gimel Midos Sharachamim. In fact, the Maharal, in his Sefer Be'er Hagola, in Be'er Revi, explains that this is the message of that very difficult section where Rabbi Yochanan says that Hashem nis'ativ k'shliach tzibur, he wrapped himself up like a shliach tzibur. I mean, what are we to learn from that? It's obviously not a literal thing, it's clearly a concept. What is that concept, and how does it help us? So the Maharal says, and you see it resonates with Rabbeinu Bachya, ituf, when a person has a talis or a scarf wrapped around their head, it means that their field of vision faces forward. It allows for focus. Without ituf, you see plenty of things out of the side, the corner of your eye. Sometimes you see more out of the corner of your eye than you actually see out the center of your eye. Life is full of distractions, then and now more than then. And therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a point of conveying this notion that he's wrapping himself up like a shliach tzibur, what he's saying is, if you wish for these words to have the effect that they can have, you need to be wrapped up in prayer. Not looking to the left, not looking to the right, not distracted, not absent-minded. It has to be with the full focus that's evoked by this image of it, of facing forward, conceptually facing forward. And that's really what Rabbeinu Bachya is saying. They can work, but they need kavana. That much they need. We should mention that there is an entire school. We talk about Yasu Lefonai Kaseder Hazeh. Let them do the following order. Rachum Lechana. There's an entire school of Meforshim, the Alshich HaKadosh, the Reshitz Chachma. These are all Talmidim of the Arizal, who lay emphasis on the expression Yasu Lefonai Kaseder Hazeh. Let them do. Let them perform this order. What does it mean to do a Seder? We perhaps would have expected, let them say the following Seder. Let them write, let them recite this Seder. Yomer Lefanai. What is the implication of Ya'asu Lefanai? Says the Al-Sheikh and all those who are with him. The full effect and the full dividends from the Yud Gimel Midos Sharachamim do not end with us ascribing those attributes to Hashem. There is a mitzvah which is called the Halachta Bidrachav. There is a mitzvah to try and emulate Hashem in terms of these qualities. Mahu rachum af atei rachum. Mahu chanun af atei chanun. Yasu lefanai, the greatest enterprise that will vouchsafe the effectiveness of the Yud Gimel Midos is if you implement them. Because that's its own circuit of midah keneged midah. The greatest thing you can do to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu have rachmanis on you is you have rachmanis on people. You be gracious to people. You be benevolent and you be kind. And that is also included within Yasu Lefanai Kaseder. So that aspect of the Yud Gimel Midos does not end when the slichos volume is closed. It actually begins. And that's also well worthy of reflection. So we've spoken about aspects of slichos, but the idea of slichos itself, what exactly are we doing? So here it's very instrumental to look at the word slichos and then look at the contents of slichos. Slichos are comprised of us asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have compassion on us and to forgive us. Slichos, kishmon kenhu. The question is, on what grounds? On what basis? Due to what? And I think our intuitive answer would be that, well, Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Aseret Yemei Teshuva, what is Slicha? It's a reaction or result of Tshuva, that we have confidence in that. If we do Tshuva properly, Hashem will forgive us. So much so, that from a certain point of view, one could say that asking Hashem to forgive you is redundant. Because if you've done tshuva, he'll forgive you. That's our tradition. That's what we have received with regards to tshuva. Tshuva works. If you haven't done tshuva and you ask to be forgiven, the answer would probably be, do tshuva and come back and ask again. And this is a very interesting shaila. It's so much a part of the tefillah. Slach lanu, mechal lanu, kaper lanu. But one of the teachers of the Ramban, Rabbi Yehuda ben Yakar, asked this question in his Perush on the Tefillahs. As they say in the classics, mimon afshach. Either way you look at it, you've either done tshuva or you haven't. If you've done tshuva, asking for forgiveness should be redundant. And if you haven't, it should be worthless. Yet here we are, asking for forgiveness. And it doesn't seem to be based on tshuva. Because, contrary to our expectations, if you open up the Sefer of Slichos, you won't find a great deal of emphasis on tshuva there. You'll find all sorts of other things. There's a lot of asking for forgiveness. There's a lot of describing the difficulties that we're going through. In the galus, in our own confusion, and people don't like us, and we're oppressed, and we have a hard time, and so have Rachmanus on us. I mean, that is the theme of your average slicha. And remember the Akedah. We say everything, it seems, other than we're sorry. It's interesting that slichos, even in English, is not translated. The word slichos is not translated. In English, it's called slichos. Because if you try to translate it, it will be translated as forgivenesses. And that means that we're saying forgivenesses. Well, first of all, that's not for us to say. Rather, we mean that we're asking for forgiveness. But it's not called tshuvos. It doesn't seem like we're doing tshuva. We're just getting to that point of asking for slicha. Based on all these other things, there is no question. It's important just in terms of orientation to recognize this. There's no question, it's true towards the end of Slichos. We say Vidui, which is one of the three aspects of Tshuva, but not so much about regret or resolve to do better in the future, but there is Vidui there at the end. But why is it at the end? Should be at the beginning. If it's the basis of Slichos, first things first, do Tshuva and then ask for Slicha. No, first we ask for Slicha for about 20 minutes, and then we say Vidui for about 3 minutes. It's clear that the theme of Slichos is not overtly tshuva. It's tefillah. And that's a separate thing. Like we say, utshuva, utfila, utstaka. It's a separate thing. And in fact, it has all of the trappings of tefillah. It has the institution of tefillah. It's like Ashrei. It's like Mincha. It begins with Ashrei and then Chatzi Kaddish. And then you've got the Shloshos Emidos, which are like the epicenter of tefillah. That's like the Amida. And then you have Tachnun. And then you have Kaddish Tiskabel. I mean, it's really like a miniature tefillah. But what are we hoping to accomplish? I believe the role of Slichos within the broader days of Tshuva is that Slichos provide the framework for Tshuva. They're not Tshuva yet. I don't think they're Tshuva. But they provide the framework for Tshuva. What that means is that it's possible to perform tshuva, we could say, in isolation. What that means is a person can have a sense of needing to do tshuva, but that's got nothing to do with God. He knows that he's done things wrong. He knows he needs to do things right. He doesn't want to get punished. He wants to be in a good place and he wants to do better. All of that is actually about him. It's the disservice of tshuva is that the person goes through the whole tshuva process, but it's only about improving. It's not about returning. Returning is about our relationship with Hashem. It's possible to almost to perform tshuva in a vacuum and consider that to be successful tshuva. These days do not allow for such an isolated act of tshuva, because we're missing the point. Of all the definitions of tshuva, the simplest translation is what it's all about. Tshuva is to return from distance from Hashem through all of these wrongdoings to closeness to Hashem. And therefore, we need to resume, in a sense, the relationship. We need to resume dialogue. We need to establish that framework where we see ourselves vis-a-vis Hashem. And nothing will do that more than tefillah. I mean, you talk to Hashem, you can talk to him about everything, about how difficult life is and how oppressed you are and how our failing, etc., and we're downtrodden. And because what are you doing? You're reestablishing yourself vis-a-vis Hashem. And all the chus others that we mentioned, the Akedah and Shema Yisrael, it's all about reclaiming our heritage as Hashem's nation. And that's the foundation for tshuva. That lays the foundation for when we come to do tshuva and we're sorry, we're not just sorry and hope to go our merry way. We're sorry and therefore we hope to return into the relationship that we've begun to reconstruct through the tefillah of slichus. With this in mind, we mentioned that slichus always start on Sunday. And we spoke about why. Perhaps it's interesting that Rosh Hashanah reflects the anniversary of the creation of man. Slichos, according to the Vilna Gaon, reflects the anniversary of the creation of the world. And perhaps that timing is also about this. The way that we relate to Hashem is a function of the way that we relate to the world. Do we look at the world as His creation, or perhaps as an independent entity? The world is our oyster, but it's not Hashem's oyster. And therefore, the tefillah of slichus, the conversation of slichus, begins on a day that marks Hashem creating the world. It's a way of marking time. It's a way of establishing how we relate to the world as the world that Hashem created, and we're in it, and therefore we need to exist vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a statement about how we relate to the world, and ultimately a statement about how we relate to Hashem. As a final comment, again, we say we start slichos on Sunday. Sunday is the beginning of the week, but it's also the day after Shabbos. And one of the Mefarshim lays emphasis on the Shabbos aspect. We say after the Pizmon for the first day of slichos, for those that are at night, b'motzoei menucha kidanucha. After the menucha, we frame our slichos vis-a-vis Motzei Shabbos. It's not so much the Sunday of the week, it's the Motzei Shabbos of the week. Why Motzei Shabbos? Is that key? Is Shabbos play a role in slichos? Apparently it does. One of the outstanding halachic authorities of the Rishonim, Ashkenazi Rishonim, is the Trumas Hadeshen, Rabbi Yisrael Isserden. And he had a student who wrote a sefer called Leket Yosher. And the Leket Yosher, he says the following. I believe it is a refreshing, inspiring and empowering vision of what slichos are all about, the way that they begin. And these are his words. What's the yichus of Shabbos? Motzei Shabbos? Says Leket Yosher, u'b'Shabbos heim penuyim mimelocha. On Shabbos, they work the whole week. On Shabbos, they rest, they're free, they have a bit of some spare time. Vehavilom de Torah. They go to a shir, make time to learn a little bit. Lachain, tov latchil biyom aleph. It's good to start slichas on Sunday. Why? Because you just had Shabbos. How do you feel? Feel good. That's a chiddush. The common notion is that slichas is about making you feel bad. But they start specifically on a day that you feel good. There's plenty to feel bad about, but it needs a context. Ki ha'am semechim. People are happy. Machmas mitzvahs haTorah shem lom de b'Shabbos. They went to a shir on Shabbos. They were at a charusa. They had a something. They read a. They're happy. The gam machmas onik Shabbos. It's a mitzvah to enjoy Shabbos. Motzei Shabbos, everyone's in a good mood. Before you turn the cell phone back on, everyone's in a good mood. V'aminan. Why is it so important to be in a good mood? These are stunning words, because the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos Daf Lamed, you know what happens if you're not happy? Ein hashchina shora, or the divine presence doesn't rest, lo mitoch atzlus v'do mitoch atzvus, not through lethargy, not through misery, ele mitoch simcha shel mitzvah. The divine presence only rests on a person when he's happy. Happy through a mitzvah. Motzei Shabbos is happy through a mitzvah. Lachein tov lahaschil lehispalel mitoch simcha shel mitzvah. Vegam apayet ischil b'motzoi menucha. See how that he references the piyut, the pizmon for day one. B'motzoi menucha. We just had a day of rest. It was a good day. We're in a good mood. And really, this resonates very strongly with the vision of slichus that's emerging. If the goal of slichus is just to get out of trouble, so maybe you don't need to be in a good mood. But the goal of slichus is to return to Hashem. Return to Hashem. You've got to prepare to receive the divine presence. And for that, you need to be in a good mood. That's the mission of slichus, and that's what the timing is all about. So these are some aspects of slichus that I believe are well worthy of our reflection, especially in a year like this. We get plenty of mileage out of the slichus. We start a week before. Each day of slichus is taking us one step further to dealing with what needs to be dealt with, reestablish our connection with Hashem, and preparing to greet the divine presence. From there, let us move to talk a little bit about Parsha Shavua, Parshas Ki Sovo. In the beginning of the parasha, of course, is the mitzvah of Bikurim, the first fruits. And I came across a fascinating discussion on so many levels. And it begins quite far away from Bikurim. As is known, there is a minhag. When someone gets married, they put ashes on the place of his tefillin. What's that all about? It's zeche lechurban. After all, imlo alas ushalaim. The breaking of the glass is much later, which is also meant to be zeche lechurban. And people erupt in applause and mazel tov. That boggles the mind. But the one moment which is zeche lechurban. But in any case, the original minhag in the Gemara, in the end of the third parak of Bava Basra, Cheska Sabatin, says that the ashes should be put in the place of the tefillin, pe'er tachas efer, because the tefillin are pe'er. And in the future we look forward to pe'er tachas efer, but in the meanwhile there's ashes. It's the same word, pe'er and efer. When is this done? The minhag olam is that when the chassan is on his way in, or just as he's about to go into to the chuppah, so then someone puts the ashes there. That's the minhag olam. Rav Soloveitchik, that's all, had a certain opinion about this. He had an opinion about everything. Halachically, he felt that is not the right time to put on the ashes on his head. Well, why not? Well, what could be wrong? The Gemara says you put the ashes on the place of the tefillin of the chassan. Rav Soloveitchik says that a chassan, you have to be particular here. You've got to be precise. He isn't really a chassan until he's married. Before he gets married, he's a chassan in waiting. But he's only a chassan, he's only a groom when he's married. The Gemara says you've got to put the ashes on the place of the tefillin of the chassan. So he's got to be a chassan before you do that. And therefore, when he was Mesadik Yidushin, his noach was that they would wait. And after the Sheva Brachos, before whatever happened next, that's when he would do it. Now he's a chassan. And now we can fulfill the din of the Gemara. Now, okay, that's interesting. One of the Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik, I mean, no, people could ask. So they had a kasha. Their kasha on Rav Soloveitchik's thesis is from another minhag that he must agree with. What happens when the chosan comes in, and the chuppah, everyone gets up. That's universal, everyone gets up. Why? Must be a reason. Surely, said the Talmud, the reason is because do we not know that chosan is dome lemelech? Chosan is like a king. Okay, so that's what Chazal say, chosan is like a king. When I speak to chassanim who are talmidim of mine, my words of advice to them is that chosan is like a king, but don't get too used to it. But at least for its time, chosan's like a king. And that's why they stand up, because you stand up when a king comes into the room. But isn't that an indication that he's already a chosan when he's on his way to the chuppah? It's a good kasha. Says Rav Soloveitchik, no. On the spot. No. No proof. No kasha. Aye, so why do they stand up? Not because he's a melech, he's a chosan. Says Rav Soloveitchik to this time, but no, the reason why they stand up is not because he's a king. The reason why they stand up is based on a Mishnah in Maseches Bikurim in the third chapter. What's happening in Maseches Bikurim? Well, the Mishnah reads, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Gimel. It describes how people would come from all over Eretz Yisrael to bring their Bikurim, and they'd converge on Yerushalayim, and they'd pass through villages and towns. Says the Mishnah, V'chol ba'alei umanios shebi Yerushalayim. All of the craftsmen in Jerusalem, you know, they'd be by the front of their shops, doing whatever they're doing, plying their trade. Omdim lifnehem would stand up. As the people bringing Bikurim would come through town, they would stand up for them. V'sholem v'shlomem, they would greet them. Acheinu anshi hamokom ploni. Batem l'shalom, come in peace. Says Rav Soloveitchik, what do we see from this Mishnah in Bikurim? Why do they stand up? There's a principle here. That's an amazing principle. When you see someone who is on his way to do a mitzvah, that commands your respect. Stand up for them. And therefore, says Rav Soloveitchik, if you say to me, isn't the fact that we stand up when the chosan comes into the room on his way to the chuppah, isn't that indication he's a melech? No, he's not a melech yet. He's not a chosan yet. But you know what he is? He's on his way to do a mitzvah, that's for sure, because a mitzvah to get married. And therefore, as per the Mishnah in Maseches Bikurim, everybody stands up. But a chosan, he's not yet. It's just breathtaking. Everything was gecheshbund, every single practice was filed away. Is it pertinent? Is it relevant? Is it connected? Is it irrelevant to the discussion at hand? That was Rav Soloveitchik. And in fact, a fascinating PS to that, because this is actually codified, this idea, by the Tor in Yeridaya, as a principle that when you see someone's on his way to do it, you stand up. Some minhagim, we're familiar with them, but we're not necessarily sure where they come from. In Psukah de Zimra, which are mostly said sitting down, the Ashrays and the Halukas, right? But at a certain point, by Yivarech David, people stand up. That's the minhag. For those that still do, that's the why? What happened? And there are explanations. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and you see how it kind of dovetails. Rabbi Yaakov says the explanation is as follows: the reason why people stand up at Vayivarech David is based on another minhag. The other minhag is that there's a certain point in that passage where the minhag is to give tzedakah. Because when we say veha osher, veha kovod milfanecha, riches come before you, there is a widespread minhag to give. So what happens? So the shul has a gabbai. That's when he starts to go around, collecting tzedakah, you hear the pushka, and he's going around. That's time-honored minhag, says Rabbi Yaakov. Unbelievable. The reason why the tzibur stands up at Vayivarech David is because they are in the presence of someone who is about to do a mitzvah. It's the gabbai tzedakah. He's going collecting tzedakah. All the people are giving tzedakah. He's collecting tzedakah. The Mishnah Bikurim says you stand. That's why we stand up Vayivarech David. So it's fascinating to see how these gedolim explain backgrounds to things that we're familiar with, but perhaps not so much understand the background to those things. Okay, so that's how Mishnah Bikurim comes to be shayach to the minhagim of chuppah and tzedakah and much, much more. Let us just conclude by referring to a very pure parshanut point. And as you'll see, it's a discussion. It can begin here. It will not end here because the implications are very far-reaching. As we know, our parsha, Kisavo, has a tochacha in it. It's the second of the two tochachas in the Torah. The first is Parshas Bechukosai, the second one is Kisavo. And although generally, of course, they are similar in theme, but there are certain key differences between them, which are mentioned by the Gemara in Megillah. And one of those differences is, grammatically, the first tochacha, plural, Loshon Rabim, in Bechukosai Teleichu, in Bechukosai Timasu, and so on and so forth. Whereas in this week's Parsha, they are in the singular. Im Shamoa Tishma, Im Lo Tishma, etc. It's in the singular. And the Gemara highlights this difference. There is a notion, I mean, what is behind this difference, the shift? There is a notion that Moshe, in Parshas Kisavo, he's looking to make things a little bit easier for the Jewish people. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him to record that tochacha as well in the Torah. But how is this so? So the simple understanding, perhaps, is that Lashon Rabim refers to the many, and Lashon Yachid refers to the one. So that's a big reduction of the tochacha. Instead of affecting everyone, perhaps it only affects one, or individuals. However, we should know, and this is an important source to know, the Vilna Gaon, in his Perish Aderes Elio, to Parshas Nitzavim, says not like that. The truth is, says the Gaon, when the Torah talks, it addresses itself in Lashon Rabim, it's talking to everyone. And when it speaks B'Lashon Yochid, it's also talking to everyone. But there's two types of everyone. There is everyone in terms of a group of individuals, and it's all of them, but it's as a mass of individuals. And there is everyone as a cohesive entity known as a tzibur, known as the community, which is its own unity. This, says the Gaon, is the difference between the plural and the singular. When the Torah speaks B'Lashon Rabim, it's all of you, all of you together as individuals, right? You're massed here. It's each and every one of you. That's that type of plural. When the Torah addresses B'Lashon Yochid, it addresses the Tzibur as a unified entity. So says the Gaon. Now, he doesn't elaborate, but I have detected two sources in the Talmud which would be support for what the Gaon is saying. Firstly, there are two mitzvahs that involve counting in the Torah. The most readily known to us is Sfiras HaOmer, counting the Omer. There's another mitzvah, it relates to this year, the counting of Shmita and Yovel. Also, it's the mitzvah to count the Shmita and Yovel. Okay. Now, it's clear from the sources, and apparent in our practice, that there's a difference as to who exactly needs to perform those mitzvahs. Who needs to perform the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer? Everyone. Each and every person. And who needs to perform the mitzvah of counting the Shmita and Yovel? The Beis Din. The best, and they need to make a count. Some say they may even have made a bracha. Sheker d'shalom mitzvah tzivano al sfiras shmita v'yova. Could be before every year. Yeah, that's foreign to us. I mean, we're not the best in, and we don't do that mitzvah. But why of the two counting mitzvahs, one applies to each and every person, and the other is the best in? Well, let's see. How does the Torah present the mitzvah of sfiras haomer? As we know, shenemar usefartem lachem. That is a plural, usfartem lachem. And as such, it addresses each and every person in the Jewish community. Lashon Rabim. As the Gemara says in Menachos, shetei sfira bepekol echad be'echad. Each and every person needs to count. Contrast, however, with Shmita and Yovel in Parshas Behar, it says, V'sofarta lecha, in the singular. That means that who is being addressed here? The Jewish people as a whole, not each and every person. And that is why that mitzvah is fulfilled through the Beis Din, because the Beis Din are a body that represent the Jewish community. It just needs one count. And therefore we see halachically this bears out what the Gaon is saying. Lashon Rabim is each and every person. Sfiras HaOmer, each and every person. Lashon Yochid, the community as a whole, and sometimes the Beis Din that represents the community. The other example is the mitzvah of Abraminim, which again is a mitzvah that devolves on each and every person. And the Torah states, Ulekachtem Lachem. And the Gemara comments in Sukkah and Daf Mem Aleph, Shetehi Lekicha Biyad Kol Echad Ve'Echad. Each and every person, it makes a point of it, each and every person needs to take the Abraminim. And we understand very well why. Because once again, it's been in the plural and therefore applies to each and every individual. So this is so far support for the Vilna Gaon. I do not delude myself or anyone else into thinking that the Vilna Gaon was not aware of this. I haven't presented him with any of the, these supports. But that would seem to be support of the Gaon. However, there are one or two other places, and only mentioned to for our consideration, that seem to indicate contrary to this. Firstly, Rashi. And Rashi's source is in the Medrash. We noted a number of weeks ago that one of the differences between the two paragraphs of Shema, the first two, that is to say, similar in so many respects, v'chol levavcha, v'chol nafshecha, is that the first paragraph is in the singular. V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, v'chol levavcha. The second is in the plural. La'avo es Hashem Elokeichem, v'chol levavchem, v'chol nafshechem. And Rashi raises the question in his commentary on the Torah in Parshas Eked. Why is the Torah seemingly repeating this, at least this part, which we've already heard, why does it say it again? And Rashi responds, Ela azhara layachid azhara latzibur. It said it again because it's presenting it in a slightly different capacity. The first time round, it's talking to the individual, each and every individual. Second time round, it's talking to the collective. That actually seems to be at odds with what the Gaon said, because the Lashon Yochid is the individual. The Tzibur is actually represented by Lashon Rabbi. Okay, that needs to be resolved. And furthermore, just one final source. The Gemara says in Maseches Sota and Daf Gimel that it speaks about how sin can affect the level of people. Again, very pertinent for this time of year. Mitchila, initially, Haisa Shchino Shiruya al Kol Echad Ve'Echad. The Divine Presence rested on each and every person. Each individual could be a recipient for the Divine Presence. What's the source for this idea? Shene Emar, it quotes a pasuk from last week's Parsha. Ki Hashem Elokecha Mishalech Bekerev Machanecha. Hashem is going within your camp. That is written in the singular, Bekerev Machanecha. The Gemara adduces it as a support for the notion that the Shechina, when people are as they should be, can be with each and every individual. One person is as he should be, Mishalech Bekerev Machanecha. According to the Vilna Gaon, the usage of the singular reflects the tzibur, the community, not the individual. These are some of the sources to ponder. But it's a very timely matter, the issue of tzibur, with regards to these days. Much of what we say on Rosh Hashanah is phrased for the tzibur, and the Vilna Gaon himself, it's important just as a proviso here. In next week's Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu says, there could be someone amongst you, etc. When he hears this curse, he'll reassure himself in his heart. He'll think, I can do what I want, I'll be fine. I can do whatever I want. So Moshe's words are, there may be some amongst you, when they hear the curses, and he's referring to the curses of Kisavo, they'll think, I can do what I want. Now that is somehow something's lost in translation, because most people, when they hear the tochacha, if they're listening, do not leave with the conclusion, oh, I guess the moral of the story is I can do what I want. That's a misreading of the most drastic nature. How is it possible? So perhaps what it means to say is that he'll ignore it, and people are capable of ignoring everything. Even assume you can hear the Baal Kori, you can still ignore it. But the Vilna Gaon says, no. There's something about that tochacha that will lead him to this conclusion. How could he possibly be led to this conclusion? Because, says the Gaon, the second tochacha is written in the singular. And in the singular, it's about the community as a whole. There may be people who, for them, the idea of community is not a calling. It's not something to engage in. It's something to exploit. Because this person will say, if the Jewish people, if it's one size fits all, and the good and the bad will happen for the Jewish people on the whole, so my main concern is that all the other Jews are behaving themselves. But if they are, I can do what I want, because it's one aspect of Hashgacha for everyone. And that's why Moshe says, do not misunderstand. There may be some amongst you, v'hayah b'shamo es divrei ha'ala hazos, when he hears this curse, this implying, as opposed to the first klolos, which were written in the plural, where there was no avoiding the fact that it's addressing each and every individual, but when he hears this one, which is more cohesive in nature, he may look to take advantage of it. He adopts a certain mercenary approach off the tzibur, says Moshe Rabbeinu. That's a mistake. Because if that's his approach, he's no longer part of the tzibur. If the sum total of his relationship with the community is to just siphon off their merits, but he has no notion of conforming with them or connecting with them or being a part of them, so he has actually detached himself from the tzibur. That person is guaranteed not to have any of the benefit that accrues to the tzibur. So the idea of tzibur should always be foremost for us. It's something that we need, something that we need to gain from and to give to. Knesset Yisrael ultimately is our true identity. And these are some of the themes as reflected in this week's Parsha. Mitzvah Shem will carry on next week. We'll be devoted to Rosh Hashanah, because in 2 weeks' time will be Rosh Hashanah itself. We'll leave it open.